Welcome to October. This is College Football 134. This is October. We will wait for another time to discuss Tarleton State's possible jump to the top tier of college football. We're College Football 134 right now, not College Football 137. We would rather spend this week talking about actual college football games. It's a bold choice. That is Andrew Cayley. I am Douglas Farmer. We should relish last week's week five highlights before getting into week six. I know you noticed some great games this weekend, Andrew.
There were some very exciting games this weekend. Admission time, I fell asleep at halftime of Alabama, Georgia. Hey, when you've got a one-year-old at home, those sleep hours, they're precious. That's a valuable commodity. And it was 30-9 or whatever it was, or 30-7. I fell asleep and I did not see that epic comeback, but I did get to watch a college kicker live in that Kentucky Mississippi game. So that was exciting. And yeah, that we turned out to have a great week when it came to our bets. So very, very happy Saturday overall.
I'm going to pretend like you didn't tell all of our listeners, all of our viewers, that you just didn't watch the second half of what very well may be the game of the season
of the year
until these two meet again. We're going to ignore that failing of your part. We're going to remind the folks to engage in the podcast verbs. Please subscribe to College Football 134 on all your pop platforms. Rate it, review it, like it, adore it, thank it, verbs. And then I will go against my usual smart content planning. I usually like us to leave the bigger items for later in the show, make people listen to us for a while before they get their steak, feed them their vegetables. But we have no choice. We have to dive into that 41-34 Alabama victory against Georgia. It was just too big of a moment to stall before we get to. Andrew, if you need, I'll tell you what happened.
I thought you were going to talk about, we've got a very interesting matchup this week as well. We've got to talk about it. It involves two service academies, but I guess we can talk about Georgia, Alabama. I did rewatch the second half on Sunday because
you hadn't watched it yet. So it was your
first time. I replayed the game that had finished that I fell asleep during, and I watched for the first time the second half of that game, because who needs to watch the NFL when you can just go watch college football again on Sunday? It was obviously what I did see in the first half live was, wow, I think we even underrated Alabama in this spot. Jalen Milroe is now the 2-1 favorite to win the Heisman Trophy and every bit deserving of this at that point. Incredibly efficient. Like he's making all these correct reads, and the power on his throws, the combination of power and accuracy is terrifying for a defense. It really is. And yeah, it was interesting, but I'll let you take on what happened in the second half, because I didn't see it. You said, I'm seeing our notes here, Georgia may have unlocked something. I see that Carson Beck, one of the reasons I felt comfortable falling asleep, because Carson Beck couldn't do anything in the first half. And it was like, this is a problem. We talked about it last week on the pod. We said, hey, like, he's missing Brock Bowers. He's missing Ladd McConkey. He does not have a security blanket. And that's what it looked like in the first half. So tell me what happened in the second half.
Desperation is the mother of innovation. That's what we saw. Carson Beck had no choice but to put it together, exploded for 27 points in the second half. Now, some of that was tied to the defense slowing down Alabama. Credit to Kalen DeBoer for having a game plan that Georgia had not seen yet. I put together the numbers going into this game. Jalen Milroe accounted for just more than a quarter of Alabama's rushing attempts, just more than a quarter of its rushing yards. In the first half, he had half of Alabama's rushing attempts, 67.9% of Alabama's rushing yardage. Kalen DeBoer clearly gave Georgia something it had to learn how to figure out. And until it could do that, the offense never had enough possession, had enough rhythm. The Alabama offense just kept scoring, making Carson Beck fret that much more and more once he could settle down, once he could trust himself. That 27-point second half turned this in from a rout into a classic. It was, in my opinion, nothing more than Georgia's probably always had these options. It just didn't trust them. It no longer had a choice. It had to trust them. And look what happened. It worked. Now, it could have worked better. Obviously, interception in the end zone cost Georgia dearly. Carson Beck was just putting up the ball when nobody was looking for it. These are items they still need to work through, but I think Georgia improved in my eyes this weekend, despite taking this loss, despite getting just destroyed in that first half. I am looking at Georgia with more credit than I was before this weekend.
Yeah, that's an interesting take there. I like that a lot. Obviously, they had to do come through at the end there and really turn things around. And credit to Kirby Smart for making those adjustments at halftime, like you said. Also, just need a shout out to Ryan Williams. Well, I still think what that kid is doing at 17 years old is so insane.
What were you doing at 17 years old? Was it not something
not making spinning, one-handed, juggling, tap-to-yourself catches in front of hundreds of thousands of people? Not that. I was playing defensive back at my high school, though.
And having somebody do that to you. Okay, I see where this was going. You can't set me up that easily.
Yeah. No. It happened.
Well, the other part of this we have to acknowledge is, you know, everybody insists 12-team playoff. This game didn't matter. This game mattered a ton. Alabama now is a -1400 favorite to make the playoff at BetMGM. You expected that. Georgia's still pretty good juice, -275. But we need to point out, Georgia's remaining schedule still includes a trip to Texas, still includes a trip to Mississippi, still includes a visit from Tennessee. And in the last decade, if you look at the end of the College Football Playoff Selection Committee's rankings, only in 2018 would a three-loss team have made the playoff. Georgia's got three tough games left. If it loses two of them, Georgia's in trouble.
Yeah, but I still think we'll see an SEC bias. And if there is a three-loss team that can get in, it's probably Georgia. And then when you look at the landscape of college football this year, like maybe if Florida State was not an absolute dumpster fire, and I don't know, maybe Michigan, we had a little more faith in Michigan, but like there's three teams in the Big Ten, like you think are playoff teams at this point, maybe two in the ACC tops. And now we're looking at the Big 12. Is there just one? Is there one playoff team in the Big 12? Like we know this is a Utah pod. Like we still have our faith in Utah, but things are a little more sketchy in that landscape over in the Big 12 now. So if there is a three-loss team that could get in, it is probably Georgia.
That's a strong way to put it. I'm going to cheer against it just because I prefer chaos. As our friend Parker likes to say, chaos begins anew every day. I'm going to hope for that, but you're probably right. I'm hoping in vain. Another possible, if not even likely, playoff team, Notre Dame beat Louisville 31-24. Notre Dame is now even money to make the playoff, but the thing that I want to do a little bit of pat on the back on, Louisville's offense is a sham. 24 points in that game, 17 of them came on drives that covered a total of 50 yards. Notre Dame played sloppy, and that was the only reason this game was close. The Cardinals averaged 5.2 yards per play. Notre Dame averaged the same. When you are supposedly this magnificent offense led by head coach Jeff Brohm, you don't want to be matched by Notre Dame's offense this season. I never had faith in this Louisville offense, and I maintain that to this day. It is a sham, Andrew.
Yeah, I'll also say that I said on the weekend that Riley Leonard had to have his best game as a passer. Now, he wasn't ripping the Cardinals up, but he was efficient. He didn't throw any picks, which was important, and he ended up throwing two touchdown passes. He was efficient. They won, and I think I'd rather... I don't know. This is an interesting playoff spot, too, for Notre Dame now as we head forward. I think you have noted here they're even money now to make the playoff. How are we feeling about that?
I look at that and I don't want to jump all the way to the end of the season. We've got a whole lot of great games to enjoy.
We might have to, though.
But looking at Notre Dame, it's going to be favored by double digits in every remaining game until its season finale trip to USC. Win that, Notre Dame is in. Lose that, 10-2 with a loss to Northern Illinois. It's going to be tough to justify. But this is one of those ones. People who say the playoff has diminished games, they should realize that Notre Dame at USC this year might have more stakes than ever. It is going to be an eliminator game for those two teams together. The longest intersectional rivalry in college football is going to have more at stake. I am looking forward to Notre Dame's trip to USC more than ever before. More than in 2012 when it put Notre Dame into the national championship game against Alabama. More than 2018 when it put Notre Dame into the playoff to get walloped by Clemson. Because this could be a win and in for both Notre Dame and USC.
So what are we lining that game? I know you said you don't want to jump ahead, but I think we have to jump ahead. I think it's really important to jump ahead in this instance. what's the perceived line here? Like, do we think
USC's it's favored?
USC's by
favored
three?
By, I would have said 4.5. I did pull this up looking at I pulled it up in Parker Fleming's numbers earlier, and he would have it 5 or even 5.5. Some of that's home field, which the Coliseum's not a great home field, but in that situation, you have to hope it would be, because if not in that moment, Trojans fans, then when?
So I think then the projected money line for Notre Dame will be in the plus 140, plus 150 range. Is that it? Or maybe plus 130. And I would rather bet Notre Dame in the money line in that game than going to get them to plus 100 to make the playoff, because they have to win that game, I think, to make that playoff. And I'd rather those extra cents of value there.
That's the debate. Does Notre Dame get in at 10-2? If you say no, then you are absolutely correct. Go bet that money. Just wait for that USC money line. But if Notre Dame can get into the playoff at 10-2, then the plus 100 would still have value.
Okay, so I have a question for you then, Nir. Another question. Does a 10-2 Notre Dame get in ahead of a 10-3 Georgia?
Georgia is not going to be 10-3 if...
Oh, sorry, not 10-3.
9-3.
Let me rephrase that. Will a two-loss Notre Dame get in ahead of a three-loss Georgia, whose losses will, say, come against Alabama and some combination of the Mississippi, Tennessee, Texas?
I would say, that's a tough one, because Georgia's only notable win would be probably Mississippi. Notre Dame's only notable win would be A&M. Georgia gets in off reputation, deserved, as we discussed last week. It's years. It's on my wall for a reason. But that's the consternation that we get to enjoy of this 12-team playoff. You've put a good one there. The odds of both of those happening are obviously slim. That's a good little brain twist of, does Notre Dame beating up on Florida State and Louisville and Georgia Tech outweigh Georgia beating up on Auburn, and I don't know the rest of its schedule because the lower half of the SEC this year is down, so I don't care about most of that schedule. That'll be an interesting – that's what we're going to get to as this year progresses. You are absolutely correct. Oh, excuse me. Georgia's also going to beat up on Florida. Hi, Jameson. How are you?
I also love that I wish if this was live, there maybe we'll have a video clip of this later. Jameson, still shout out. We might need a clip here. I love seeing your brain actually twitch. I very rarely get to see your brain twitch like that when I handed that question to you. So there you go. Let's go to the next. We have another potential playoff scenario in the next game we want to talk about. What is it?
Well, Boise State took it to Washington State. You slept through that, obviously, because we slept through the second half 100%. Of Alabama, Georgia. There's no way you woke up for Boise State, Washington State. Boise State 45. Washington State 24. It's time to just outright talk about Boise State making the playoff. I checked the odds today. Boise State is down to 2-1, and we're using the BetMGM odds just to be consistent throughout the season. You can dismiss Liberty. I refuse to acknowledge Liberty in this conversation with no quality wins. I don't care if they're 11-0, 12-0 with conference championship. They will have nothing of note. James Madison is getting my attention at that 7-1. But if we're talking 2-1 and then jumping all the way down to 7-1, Boise State, it might be time to just acknowledge a playoff front runner.
Yeah, I would call them the front runner right now. Like, they'll be favored in that matchup against UNLV, I think. I saw that number you showed me for UNLV right there at plus at 11-1 there. That intrigues me. I think UNLV can lose that game at home to, and we talked about this. UNLV might be a better football team now that they don't have their quarterback. And it sure looked like it on the weekend. But I think UNLV can lose that game to Boise State. I think, what's that? Is it November? It's a mid-November date?
Nope. It's October 25th. We have two separate outlines in this life to pull the curtain back for everybody. The one we share, and then I have my own personal outline. I assume you have your own personal outline. You have pretty much just ripped through the next two paragraphs of my personal outline.
I'm so sorry.
Boise State has the UNLV on Friday, October 25th. I can tell you now that game is going to be an offensive delight. I'm going to probably just act like it's my birthday and enjoy that game. I'm already thinking take the over on that through 63. And while I'm on the topic, you are correct. UNLV is plus 1,100 to make the playoff. I'm not advising that bet at the moment, but I am citing it for future reference, and I might make that bet here coming up, especially because I just pulled up using SP Plus as a quick – quick spread calculator. Right now, Boise State, UNLV, I think that'd be close to a pick 'em.
Yeah, but and I think that they're probably likely to both be in the Mountain West Championship game, right? Like, we would say they're probably the favorites to be in that game. And I think the winner of that game right now is the favorite to go to the playoff. So if you're giving me 11-1, like, obviously a bad loss. Like, we saw Northern Illinois cough away their playoff chances.
That's too bad.
But we saw Memphis do the same thing with their getting blown out by Navy there, like teams that were in that conversation to make the playoff. And you obviously need to take care of business for if you're one of these group of five teams. But so far, UNLV is in a good position. Hey, and if UNLV, who is favored this week against Syracuse, they win this week, then they have three power four wins on the season. Like, no other group of five team is going to be able to match that. So,
well, we should acknowledge one of them is against Houston, and
they're bad.
Yeah. Like, we can criticize Kansas and Jalen Daniels, but there's at least been points in the year of 2024 that we've thought, hey, Kansas, you're pretty good. Jalen Daniels, you're entertaining. There's been no moment from January 1st, 2024 to today, October 1st, 2024, where we've thought, hey, Houston, how about that? No, it's just been they bad. So it's like 2 1/3 power four wins. I'll count beating Houston as a third of a power four win at this point. I think that does it for our week five recap, because the playoff picture was changed this past week and we wanted to focus on that and now move into week six. I am cautious with some of these games. I will have more thoughts when we go live Saturday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern on the Covers YouTube and Twitter channels. So come join us then for some more conviction, especially in this first game. I have a lean. I'm hoping you can talk me into or out of it. We've got Missouri at Texas A&M, the only top 25 matchup this week. Texas A&M, a 2-point favorite as of Tuesday afternoon with a total of 48.5. That's noon Eastern time on ABC. I kind of think maybe the wrong team is favored. Maybe I'm just an Aggie skeptic. Yes.
Just did it right back to me. Oh my, I wish I could bring up my outline right here. I just have it in a regular doc. It says Mizzou looks like the better team from top to bottom. My gut says the wrong team is favored here. Yeah. I think the Tigers are being a little undervalued here because they've had tough matchups against Vandy and BC, but just as it's kind of cyclical, I think those two teams were probably undervalued heading into those matchups as well. Those are tougher matchups than we thought heading into them. But Mizzou overall, they rank 13th in offensive success rate. They rank 4th in defensive success rate. Well, Texas A&M has plenty of questions at quarterback. I don't think Wegman will play even if he's healthy. Marcel Reed, has won 3 straight games, but he's completing just 54% of his passes, pretty low yards per attempt. Went just for 11 for 22 against an okay defensive Arkansas team. Like, they have an okay defense. Mizzou's defense is much, much scarier, I would say. And yeah, Texas A&M defense has been fine. Not spectacular. 51st in defensive success rate. I think Luther Burden is going to eat them up. He kind of was slow playing the season to start. I think he's just kind of warming up as we're going along now. And yeah, here it is. I'm talking myself into the Missouri money line right now. Best bet. We're going to call it. We're going to put it on the board. Missouri money line plus 110. You can get that at BetMGM right now. So I like that.
I was preparing to do the same thing. So I think we're both now. I think we have to both add it at the end of the week when we have our bets recaps and we have our graphics. We both will have Missouri Moneyline plus 110 at BetMGM. Boy, if you've ever wanted to fade college football 134, folks, I have your moment.
It's right Ooh, now.
This is a little
right now.
This is
we now.
All right. So yeah, you and I
have the same notes. Oh my goodness.
Well, the one piece that my notes you didn't get to, it's I like the situation for Missouri. If the overtime scare against Vanderbilt didn't jolt the Tigers into gear, then nothing ever will. They have it was then an idle week. Now, I dismiss anyone who says teams are more likely to win off idle weeks because the data just disproves that entirely. But so they haven't been beat up and they're not worn out. And the more important piece for me is they have UMass next week. So Missouri has had 2 weeks now to focus on Texas A&M with no thoughts of what's coming next. Because again, it's UMass. So I like the situational spot for Missouri as well. Of we're going to focus on A&M and A&M alone. I am uncomfortable agreeing with you, and I don't think it'll be the last time to show, which makes me even more uneasy. But hey, chaos begins anew every day.
That's scary. It's scary. We never align this.
Another thing, and this is the reason we don't align. Something else we agreed on this year was that Washington would be really bad, and now Washington is a 2.5-point favorite against top 10 Michigan this weekend, 7:30 Eastern time on NBC. Andrew, were we wrong about Washington? Where do you land on this?
Can I just say it's just Michigan's offense is that terrible? Is that like they can't throw the football? This team can't throw the football at all. Everybody knows what they're trying to accomplish on offense. I guess we're wrong on Washington, but like, I don't know. Will Rogers is okay. And the defense has been impressive. 7th in defensive success rate, I think, is the number that stood out to me. That wasn't something I was expecting from this Washington defense. But I'm not sure if Rogers is going to be the guy here. He's kind of a dink and dunker. Like he makes his first read and he gets the ball out quick. Like that's what he did at Mississippi State. And that's what he's doing here with Washington right now. I don't think that's going to play so well against this Michigan defense. Maybe this is a situation where we're looking at the first half under. But yeah, I think it's going to be an ugly game. I'm not going to invest too much into it, I don't think.
I do not have a bet on it, but I do want to try to explain to people who are going to see that a 3-2 Washington is favored against a top 10 Michigan. I want to try to give some context of why that is the case. Washington, yes, 2 losses. Both losses were box score comedies. The Apple Cup loss to Washington State was not as egregious as this past Friday's loss against Rutgers. Now I'm going to steal a bit from our friend Parker Fleming, who was unable to join us today because of my own scheduling mistakes. Parker every week puts out a graph he refers to as, did we really get beat that bad? Now, if you look at this, the team that got beat the worst but still won was Rutgers. Washington had a net success rate of about 20% higher than Rutgers on Friday. And I was a Rutgers better. I was fine with how that turned out. But the Huskies should win that game regularly. To give it some context, if you look at the other side of the graph, teams who are about plus 20% in success rate, Texas won by 22, James Madison won by 56, Tulane won by 35, Washington lost by, I think it was 3. It was an absurd sequence of events that got Rutgers that win. And smart books, smart bettors will kind of dismiss that final result to focus more on the process of Washington outplayed Rutgers. Now, again, its other loss to Washington State was not as egregious, but Washington still had a net success rate in that game of about plus 5%. So if you're wondering how a 2-loss team is favored against a top 10 team, it's because Washington has a pretty good argument that it should be 4-1 or 5-0. And like you said, Michigan's offense is that bad. And then one more point, rankings and polls are stupid and should be ignored. Sorry, you Associated love it. Press, yes. Top 25.
Is this the weirdest national championship rematch in history of college football?
Yeah, I guess TCU didn't play Georgia a few years back. That would have been even more comical. But this is neat. And what's weird about it is neither team is the same. Michigan replaced 10 offensive starters. Washington replaced, I think, 19 or 20 total starters. Neither team has any consistency from that game we watched on Monday night in January. Well, you watched. I famously try not to watch a national championship game.
Yes, of course you don't. Okay. Let's bring it home with one more game of the week here. Because I don't want yes,
it.
Game of the week.
I don't want
Come
it.
Come on. Let's go. Come on, Douglas.
At Andrew Cayley's request, I am now legally required to discuss Miami heading to California at 10:30 Eastern time on ESPN. I have exactly two takes for you on this game. First of all, Mario Cristobal is dumb. He got away with it again Friday night by a whisker on a Hail Mary. The call may have been correct, but the fact of the matter is Mario Cristobal got away with one again. And second of all, Andrew wants to talk about this game because College Game Day is going on to Berkeley. Everybody, don't watch College Game Day on Saturdays. Watch us on Saturday mornings instead. We will not spend time groping ducks, belittling college students, or feigning disgust at college football players getting paid. We will instead find value, find edges, and be kind of entertaining. There, I'm done. That is Miami, my Miami Cal overlook.
Okay. Well, for starters, it's not because the game day is at Berkeley for this matchup that we should talk about it. I think it's because the teams have 5-0 and 3-1 records heading into this matchup, and that is why we will talk about it. I also want to talk about it because I heard that the best nickname for this game is now Woke versus Coke, and that needs to be on a t-shirt right now. Sorry, kids, do not do drugs. But that is the best thing I've heard this week in terms of that game. Yeah, shout out to producer Mario as well for not being here. But yeah, I really think that Miami got ahead of itself in that game against Virginia Tech. I still believe in this Miami defense. They really just need to keep Mario locked. I think put him up in the press box or put him somewhere else. Don't let him be near the field during game days. Pretty good recruiter. Seems like he's a pretty good practice coach, but they just got to keep him away from the field on game day. And I think Miami will be much better. Cam Ward's still obviously playing very well for them. I think he'll have success in this game as well. No lean for me at this point, but like you said, we can do a bit of a deeper, you can do a bit of a deeper dive when everybody comes to watch this and talk about it a little more on Saturday, Doug.
And knowing me, with that being maybe the last game this weekend, let me scroll to the bottom of a schedule to confirm that. Yes, it is Miami-Cal, and half an hour later, Texas Tech-Arizona. Knowing me, I'll make sure I have some action on at least one of those two, just to, so there's something going on in the background while I keep writing late Saturday night. So yeah, come join us Saturday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern time, and I might have a Miami or Cal bet. We will always be there live Saturday mornings. I think this Saturday morning, Andrew will be more excited than ever. He doesn't usually sleep the night before a Service Academy game. And this Saturday at noon Eastern, we get Navy at Air Force on CBS. Now, Andrew, before you start cooking on that, let's acknowledge our week five. We, for once, both had a strong week. I went 5-3 for plus nearly 2 units. I'm now 21-21 on the show this year, down 1.47 units. I am nearly out of the hole I dug with my week zero offer. It has been a burden around my neck that I just went 0-4 on those four games, and I hate it. But I'm almost out. I'm almost there.
Yeah, you're almost there. Not quite. Still got a little more work to do. Not as much as me. I have more work to do. But we had a 5-2 week for almost 3 units there. So really happy with that. One of the losses, the only one we really missed on, was that Alabama-Georgia first half, which I never would have saw that coming. But and then UNC coughed up a 20-point third quarter lead, which is kind of just Mac Brown doing his thing, which you're not going to say it, but you can say you told me so on that one. But yeah, we can get into the Service Academy stuff now.
Well, no, what I want to say on that note is the bet that did not make the show for me, the bet I left on the cutting room floor, was Pittsburgh by 3 against North Carolina, because I am so out on Mac Brown and I can't imagine the team is reinvesting. He has that debacle of the James Madison game that goes into the locker room and says, I might be done. I'm not sure. And then a week later, they blow a 20-point lead against their closest rival. Today, you know, beacon of truth and foresight, Mike Gundy said college football needs a commissioner and named Mac Brown and Nick Saban as his thoughts. Apparently, Mike Gundy already thinks Mac Brown is retired, and I'm worried the Tar Heels locker room might also think that. I would take a long look at Pitt by a field goal if you haven't considered that. I did not make my best bets, but since you brought up my Mac Brown take, I want to double down, triple down on that thought.
It was funny because you had mentioned Manny Diaz not liking Mac Brown so much. And then I did watch game day for a second, and Nick Saban was like, I am picking Duke here because I know the history between these coaches, and gave no other handicap. And I was like, oh, damn. So, yeah, just to back you up there. So game day did give you some good support in that sense.
Well, next time I'd appreciate it if Coach Saban would cite me. That would be greatly appreciated. Maybe this weekend he will cite you as our Service Academy under expert. Ladies and gentlemen, it is early October, and this is the moment Andrew Cayley has been waiting 9 full months for, to preach the gospel of Service Academy unders. I'm going to clear the floor. This game right now, Navy, as of Tuesday afternoon, is a 9.5 or 10-point favorite with a spread with a total of 35. Andrew, have at it. What are your thoughts when the total is as low as 35?
Okay, so for the uninitiated, Unders are 44-9-1 in the last 54 meetings between Service Academy programs. So that is a cash rate of 83%, which is basically unheard of in sports betting. Now, the Sparks Notes version of why this trend has happened is a few reasons. One, all three of these teams, Air Force, Navy, Army, run the triple option. That means a lot of running the football. Two, there is a lot of stability with these programs. Generally, coaches are around for a long time. They can't hit up the transfer portals like other teams can. So lots of seniors, lots of continuity. They buy into these systems. What does that mean? At the most simplest form is we get a lot of four-yard runs, which means the clock is always moving. Now, Douglas, you can come at me and you can say, well, lines have obviously adjusted. How can a trend from 2014 have an effect on a bet in 2024? The value's all gone. Odds makers have baked this into all of these things. And in a sense, yes, I do agree with you. Obviously, the odds have adjusted. But my case here is that books still haven't adjusted enough, or maybe even cannot adjust enough, because if they get to a certain point, the liability will become too much on the other side. So I want to highlight the last four seasons here where we've seen the actual dramatic change in these totals. Prior to the last four seasons, we're seeing totals high 40s, even the 50s for these matchups. But last four seasons, we're looking at more like mid to low 30s. Average total last four seasons, 36.5. Douglas, can you tell me how many overs we've had in the last four seasons? That's 12 games. So each team plays each other. So there's three games a season. 12 games total. How many overs have we had in that stretch?
Am I allowed to admit that I know the answer because I read your thorough college football trends article on this at covers.com. If anybody's getting lost somewhere in Andrew's numbers, go find this article on his Twitter or my Twitter or on covers.com/NCAAF because he goes through all of this. And I'm pretty sure the answer to his question is one time.
It is one. Do you know the game?
I do because I
You ruined this by reading this article. Anyways, the game was Army-Navy from 2022. Do you know the score of that game at the end of regulation off the top of your head?
No, Andrew, I have no idea. What was the score at the end of regulation of 2022 Army-Navy?
That game was 10-10. So here's one that you might not know. What is the combined average score of those 12 games? Oh, good. You actually don't know this one. It's 25.3 points in those 12 games. So we're still getting totals of 36.5 average. Total points scored 25.3. The low was 15. The high was 47. The 47 was the first matchup in Air Force Navy in 2020. Air Force won that game 40-7. Tell me how many times that we've seen a combined score of 30 or more points, Douglas.
Twice.
Once. And it is that Air Force. It is that Air Force Navy game from 2020. Yes. And that, like I said, 40-7 for Air Force in that one. So you can also come to me and say, hey, but don't Air Force and Army have new wrinkles to their triple option? Aren't they be a little more explosive this year? Why? Yes, you can say they are. But they still run the ball 80% of the time, like 80% time still runs. You can also say, does one team look overmatched? Navy is favored by 9-10 points here. Shouldn't that matter too? No, it should not. So Air Force has been the class of the Service Academy rivalry for the last couple of years. And that's because they had a good quarterback in Hazeek Daniels. He was gone last year, but for the last several years, they were the class because of Hazeek Daniels. And it may seem counterintuitive, but you really need a good quarterback in a triple option offense. It's a very quick read you have to make, and a good one makes all the difference in the world. Now, Air Force was favored by 14 points over Navy in 2022. They were scoring 40 points a game heading into that game. Like, they had the explosive offense. They won that game 13-10. Okay. They were also an 18-point favorite against Air Force later last season. They were 18-point favorites against Army last season. Lost that game 23-3 under. They were a 10.5 point favorites against Navy last season as well. They won that game 17-6, and there was a return touchdown in that game. Under. So the point is I'm trying to make here is, yes, maybe these overs will finally start hitting at some point. But, like, the numbers say it's due at some point. But jumping on the other side here, because it appears to be the contrarian play, because, oh, books have this baked in, is not actually correct at when you do the deep dive here. So 35s are still out there. I have under 35 in this as a best bet. I'd take under 34.5 as a best bet as well. I'd much rather be on this side than being, hey, I'm going to take the over, because you're basically saying the over is due. Like, that is what you're saying.
I'm going to try to sum up most of that with...
I'm sorry.
No, this is... It's nice to see people passionate. It's always good to watch somebody talking about a thing they enjoy. It's one of the only real fun things in our miserable lives. And so to watch you show this happiness about Navy and Air Force's inability to score this weekend, I'm happy for you. It's good to see you smiling about something. But I want to sum it up with the two aspects of, one, anytime a total in college football is below 40, statistically, it still goes under because the algorithms, the books, the odds making struggles to create totals that are low enough in situations that demand them. Exhibit B, Iowa. And the other point I want to make on this game, you mentioned it early on, they run so much. If you look at rush rate over expected, Army leads the country. Number two, Air Force. Number three, Navy. Far and away than anybody else. But you hinted at the one thing I really want to ask you. You would still bet it at 34.5. When would you not bet this under, Andrew?
For this matchup, for Air Force, Navy specifically, I think the number, the stop number is 31.5. Like, it's a key number. I think that's the absolute, like, okay, now we're looking at the other side at 31.5. But like you said, like, this number opened at 36.5 and it's down to 35, 34.5 already, depending on the book. Like, it's not Joe Schmo making those early week bets driving that number down. It's not. So there are some groups out there that are seeing the value in that number as well.
One book opened at 38.5. The earliest Sunday line, genuine Sunday line, was 38.5. So yes, it has fallen by more than a field goal. If this hits 31, will you bet the over?
I won't bet the over. No, but I would stop recommending the under. Like, that's, I think that's what I need. Where I'd bet the over, like, I'd actually go try to middle my bet, 27.5.
Okay. Okay.
Was that not what you were looking for? I don't know. Army Navy closed with the lowest total in this matchup on record, and it was 28. We got a push in that game. I don't know. That's been the number that I've been circling as this is kind of the key number for this matchup the last couple of seasons, the 28.5, 27.5.
Well, I suppose what we need to hope for now more than anything else is usually every year we get three Service Academy meetups. This year, Andrew, it's possible we get four. Now that Army is in the American and both Army and Navy are 4-0, you're gonna this year, Andrew. It's not likely. It's the odds of Army and Navy both making the American Championship game are slim, but okay. You might get a fourth Service Academy game this year.
So I haven't looked far enough into the schedule, and I kind of forgot that Army's in the AAC this year. Is the conference championship week before Army Navy? That's crazy.
The Army Navy game does not count for conference standings.
That's amazing. What a twist.
You should be a little embarrassed you did not know that aspect, because me being able to tell you you might get four Service Academy unders this year should have been like the highlight of your 2024. No offense to your wife and child, this should be the item that's getting you out of bed every morning.
Yeah, that's a good point. You're right. I will not tell my wife and child to listen to this episode, though.
download, like, and subscribe, of course, because
please, some everyone else are more important.
We should carry on a bit quicker through the rest of our best bets. I am going to very much change our vibe. You took an under 35. I'm going to come out here and take an over 58.5 on Friday night. That is Syracuse at UNLV, available at neg 110 at BetMGM. Now, I can't get through all of these numbers. This is going to be another handicap with a lot of numbers. But I want to try to emphasize to people the difference that quarterback Haj Malik Williams made for UNLV, replacing Matthew Sluka. Everybody remembers our Saturday discussion of that supposed NIL dispute. Now, current power rankings, current numbers, still have some preseason priors baked in, especially with a team like UNLV, who before this week had played only 3 games, has now played only 4. But a week ago, UNLV's offensive EPA, expected points added per snap, effectively, how good are you, was at plus 0.032. 1 game of Haj Malik Williams raised that to plus 0.061, nearly doubled it. Now, let's think about 3 games of Matthew Sluka and some preseason priors. 3 games of Matthew Sluka, some preseason priors, and 1 game of Haj Malik Williams, twice as good. That right there tells you how good UNLV's offense was with 1 game of Haj Malik Williams. It nearly doubled that EPA average. Rush rate over expected through 3 games for UNLV was at 17.2%. Through 4 games, 12.1%. UNLV finally tried to throw the ball because it could. It had a quarterback who could complete more than 44% of his passes. It may be a few weeks before the world properly understands the adjustment we need to apply to UNLV's offense now that the go-go offense has a passing attack. That passing attack, through three games, negative value on EPA per dropback. Through 4 games, plus 0.042. Through 3 games, lower than 38% success rate. Through 4 games, 45% success rate. That discrepancy after just 1 game should emphasize to everybody how good the Haj Malik Williams-led offense was, and that is why I am taking UNLV points and UNLV over as often as I can for the next couple of weeks, including this over 58.5 on Friday night.
Love it. And I'm going to keep going, and I'm going to be much quicker with this one, with another over here, and it's going to be a bit of a sick one. We're going with Temple UConn over 49.5 minus 110 at FanDuel. I just want to quickly give Jim Mora and the Huskies some flowers here. I didn't know if this team was going to have a program a couple of years ago, the way where they were going, at least a Div 1 program. And now they're 3-2 this season, 4-1 against the spread. I don't think it matters who plays quarterback for them this week. Joe Fagnano or Nick Evers, they can both effectively run the offense. They both played the majority of their last 2 wins. They both put up more than 40 points in those games. And now it doesn't matter because they're playing Temple. Temple 116th in defensive success rate, 132nd in opponent EPA per rush. Both Rel Robinson and Cam Edwards, the Huskies back, should have big games. But I want to give Temple a little credit too. I'm shocking. I know, but they, because they switched their quarterback to this guy, Evan Simon. You can say whatever. Evan Simon, 3 games ago, now they're 2-1 ATS with him as quarterback. That includes that outright win against Utah State. He's got 9 touchdowns to 2 interceptions. The team's put up 20, 45, and 14 points. I think the 20 is kind of what we're looking at here. The other two are a little more at the ends there. UConn's D is solid, but not elite. Temple can get in that 17-point range. This game goes over.
I don't disagree with it. I like UConn by 2 touchdowns in that game. That was one of my Sunday thoughts. Otherwise, I hope to avoid that game because sometimes having 2 bets in a game of that perverse quality makes you question your own lifestyle choices.
No, not in college football. The way of life.
I'll be content having 1 bet on that game. Another game that, you know, if there's any game in the country this year that's going to score fewer points than your service academy under, it's the one on the shores of Lake Michigan. We've got Indiana at Northwestern, total of 42, available at neg 112 at Bet Rivers. Note the number 42. That's a key number in totals betting. It was available at 42.5 earlier in the week. 42 matters. I grabbed that 42.5. Then I grabbed it again when our NFL colleague Jason Logan woke up from the boredom of corporate football and started harping on the Chicago Bears under for this coming Sunday. Soldier Field is not a punt away from Lake Michigan. It's close, but it's not a literal punt away like the Northwestern temporary stadium is. So if we're already worrying about the Bears total on Sunday, figured we should just lean into the Northwestern total on Saturday. And you look at Northwestern's offense, it's even easier to believe in. I should find something it does okay at. It turns possessions into quality drives more than 45% of the time, number 58 in the country. Then again, that success helps our under hopes because Northwestern then fails to score, scoring just 2.28 points per quality drive, number 128 in the country. Reminder, folks, we're college football 134 because there are 134 teams. Northwestern converts drives into points at 128th rate. That's trouble. So the Wildcats chew up clock and then fail to do anything with it. Notable for this conversation, field goal attempts, 5 of 8 at home. You know, again, a punt, a sideways punt can go into Lake Michigan at the stadium. Yeah, it might affect some field goals. And now we're already worrying about the wind forecast at 15 miles per hour, and that doesn't adequately account for the lakeside placement. Give me this under 42. Note the key number. I will enjoy that and continue to laugh at this beautiful, it's a beautiful stadium, but it's creating value for us.
Yeah. No worries about our Indiana wagon offense going in there being better than the environment.
35-0, I still win. So yeah, I'm
there
not.
There you worried. Go. There you go. Okay. I'll go into another edition of They Bad with my final bet of the week here. I'm going with Minnesota under their team total of 20.5. That's -113 over at FanDuel. Few things. Minnesota's 27-24 loss to Michigan is a fraud. Like, that is not a real final score in that game. 24-3 heading into the fourth quarter there. I guess Michigan just let off the gas. It was kind of weird. They were still held to less than 300 total yards and 4.5 yards per play in that game. That offense, they bad. Particularly the passing attack, which ranks 121st in EPA per dropback. Meanwhile, USC bounced back from that Michigan loss, kind of like we expected. A little bit of a rocky start against Wisconsin, but they held their top two backs to just 3.9 yards per carry, which was kind of the big issue in the Michigan loss, giving up those big running plays. And they gave up just 180 passing yards when all was said was done in that Wisconsin game, 63 of which came on a blown coverage on a bad play in the first half there. USC still has some issues on defense, but like I said last week, they sure up that tackling. I don't think Minnesota has the tools to take advantage of those weaknesses, particularly the play at quarterback being the biggest problem. And yeah, so Minnesota team total under 20.5 looks like a solid play for me here today.
This is our worst podcast of the year because we're going to agree again. I had been thinking about this bet before I saw your team total. I'm not going to jump off a bet simply because we agree. Sometimes that emphasizes the content for folks. You're right. The Gophers are bad. They have a few talented offensive playmakers, which is why I get kind of frustrated about this team. Running back Darius Taylor, wide receiver Daniel Jackson are both really good. Minnesota should be better than this nonsense, but it's not. The Trojans defense, like you said, continues to be underappreciated. I'm in agreement. The Wisconsin had an 18-yard touchdown possession last week that cost me a team total under, which I hate it when that's one touchdown via explosive play, one touchdown via short field like that. I was still right. USC's defense still deserves the credit that you were just giving it.
Yeah.
Minnesota's disjointed offense won't produce. So I'm going to take USC by 8, available at -110 at Bet Rivers. Minnesota's defense is okay, but it gives a lot of success up on the rush. USC doesn't run often, but it is effective when doing so. I think that combination is going to force the Gophers defense into a difficult position, load up against the run for the rare moments the Trojans do so, but at the detriment of a quality pass defense. And any defensive compromise there for the Gophers will be too much with this lackluster failing offense against what we maintain is underappreciated USC defense.
Do you want to know my favorite stat for this Minnesota offense is? It's just a reminder. Here is a reminder for everybody that Minnesota, the Golden Gophers, scored 17 points against a UNC team that gave up 70 to James Madison. 70 to James
Madison. You don't have to remind me. I was at that Minnesota-North Carolina game in the rain enjoying that on a lovely Thursday night. I was there. I know exactly how many points Minnesota gave up to North Carolina.
Yeah, they bad.
They bad. They are indeed bad. Andrew, we should get out of here so you can go do more research on trends in the Service Academy games. I'm sure you have not dove all the way into first quarter trends or third quarter trends.
I have a note. I have another stat, but I'll just leave that one for Saturday when we inevitably talk about it.
No, come on now. Don't tease.
No. We're going to save it. We got to tease for Saturday.
live Saturday morning, 9 a.m. Eastern on the Covers YouTube and Twitter channels, as well as both of our Twitter accounts. Andrew, before we get out of here, why don't you recap your day's bets? I'll do the same after you.
So my off-the-cuff bet there was, I think we're both on it now, is Mizzou Moneyline plus 110. We're going with Air Force Navy under 35. UConn Temple over 49.5 and Minnesota team total under 20.5.
I am indeed with you on that Missouri money line. Those, we got to that separately, but at the same moment, you got to love that kind of synergy. It's rare for you and me. I'm on the Syracuse UNLV over 58.5, available at -110 at BetMGM. That'll be my Friday night entertainment. I'm on the Indiana Northwestern under 42 because the shores of Lake Michigan were not meant for football. And I am on USC by 8 at Minnesota. And you mentioned Army. I will just note Army is an 11.5 point favorite at Tulsa. And I don't hate that, even if it's over the hook is going against us. I have not bet that, but I don't hate it. I am Douglas Farmer, D_Farmer. That is Andrew Cayley, Covers_Cayley. And we will see you all bright and early on Saturday morning.